Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I am unashamed. What about you?
So I'm back from Crete again. Still here enjoying the beautiful Mediterranean. I expected y'all to mention my background behind me. This is, Dad, over here they call this a villa. I'm in a villa.
Have you ever stayed in a villa? Have you seen any ducks flying around on the ocean?
No ducks. I've seen a few pigeons and some doves, but I hadn't seen any ducks.
Yeah, I didn't see any ducks there while I was there.
So I'm from the villa in Crete and coming to you for Unashamed. And so, Jace, you've done all this media, and we talked about on the last podcast for your new show. I know today when you leave here, you're going to more local media. tell our audience show you got
in
coming.
My life.
I see y'all walking toward the camera, and I'm looking at Cy, the one I've been running with since he ran naked for the first 6 years of his life in a log cabin. I watched him mature and grow up and fight with Ma about whether he's going to wear clothes at school or not. From there, Cy's on one hand, Jace is on the other, Jeff's just looking up like, how'd I get here? And Murray Crow just there for the, I'm just looking at the little cadre of people who are looking for treasure.
And the entourage.
I looked over at Miss Kay, I said, Is that our sons and my brother? I mean, what? Murray with a great, he has a great story of him coming to Jesus, but it all came together. I said, you know what? I actually think that's going to work.
You know, Phil, I thought, it has been surprising.
It's going to work.
I kind of had a chip on my shoulder just because I think people thought that family entertainment won't work today, which I'm just not sure why. I mean,
it's not lewd and filthy and women's boobs bouncing around.
It took me back to, you know, where I got a lot of insight and a lot of just good family wholesome entertainment was on Andy Griffith. I used to watch, that's something I watched. I mean, I remember the guy, there was an episode that had a profound impact on me. I mean, we're talking Andy Griffith here. Because they had an Uncle Si, was Barney.
I thought your interaction with the people who owned the land where you were looking for whatever's in the ground. And they had threw a big fish fry. And I looked at how they had those fish fried. I said, they know how to fry a fish. And they know how to put a meal.
Yeah, it was
the hospitality that was available was worth seeing because you see so little of that.
There was zero difference in the way they cook their fish and the way we cook ours.
That is correct.
And look, you go out to restaurants and, you know, I've been to places where just a fish will make you gag.
Yep.
But people who live off the land, they live outdoors and they're good fishermen. They know how to cook.
Yep.
I mean, everything I ate that day was fantastic.
I mean,
it was
interaction
phenomenal
between y'all, two family groups who had just met each other. It's awesome TV, Jace. I mean,
it was real life. The camera people filmed that whole scene from a distance one time. When we finished, I said, look, we may have to do a couple of things that they didn't have camera coverage over. And so I was expecting, you know how producers are. I mean, they say, come on in. They film. Nobody said, Jay, say a prayer. I just thought, we're fixing to eat.
Who heads up that Fox Nation, Kilmeade, is he the one the go-to guy, Brian Kilmeade?
No, Phil, he's just one of the personalities.
Yeah.
No, I had supper with the people who had all that up. It went well.
Yeah.
But that's a different story. But what I was going to say is, what was I saying? What was I talking about?
You were going to tell the Andy Griffith episode.
Oh, yeah. So there was an episode that Opie, you remember as a kid, and I was just a little older than him when I was watching this, but he was enamored with this guy who was basically a con man. And he was telling him all these sayings, like, because Opie would say, well, I got chores to do. I don't remember the exact phrases. I mean, I hadn't seen this in 30 years. But he said, and that old guy told him, he's like, well, remember this. Don't do today what you can put off for tomorrow. Well, you know, when you think about it, that's terrible advice. And that was the point of the show. Yeah. And so finally, you know, Opie's dad, the sheriff, Andy, he meets with the old boy because he realizes his son's being influenced in a negative way. Mm. And he makes this illustration about a bait. And he's like, yeah, it looks shiny and all, but it's got a hook in it. And it kind of made me think of the deceitfulness of sin and how we get influenced by people. And, but I mean, as a kid, I watched it. It was a great thing for me to watch. I thought, I need to watch out. Just because you're old doesn't mean you're wise.
A lot of people compared our original Duck Show to Andy Griffin, which I always thought was a total plus because that's the kind of show that stands the test of time. And I think ours is sort of the same way. And you said it. You got, you know, Barney and Cy, who are sort of this comedic influence.
Yeah.
But then you've also got Dad and Andy, who are kind of your moral core, you know, you can always set back to them. You got Aunt B, Miss K, you know, the women who kind of run the household. And so when I'm speaking about this on the road, I always say, now I always ask the audience, I said, who do you think is Otis the drunk on our show? Of course, everybody laughs because there's no real answer. But then I always say, maybe old Mountain Dog.
Well, you had Ernest T, you know, I'm not sure which character he was, but it didn't matter. It was relationships, it was family, and the overall thrust of it was just, it was good, wholesome, you know, fun. And so it's been good. I mean, I've gotten to do a lot of crazy things. One thing I should have talked about on the last podcast from my trip, but I didn't know if this had ever happened in the history of our society, so I went ahead and made a breakthrough for you duck hunters out there. But because we did this bit on the Waters World show or whatever that's called. And so what they wanted to do, they said, would you mind going out and interviewing the people just about random topics? And Jep was like, I think we should do it. It'd be fun. So they take us to Times Square. I mean, they just escorted us down there. And so we interviewed people. They gave us 5 questions, and we had no say in the questions. They just said, I said, well, we need at least one treasure, because that was the theme of the show. You know, they said, go find treasure in Times Square with the people.
The rednecks entering the hustle and bustle world.
The world, yeah.
The New Yorkers.
But it hit me, so I said, well,
y'all
look,
did stand out and look a little weird.
I don't know, Phil. There were some weird people there.
Oh, I mean, that's when weirdness met weirdness. But the good news is weirdness is in around here, Jay.
So we start asking these questions to just random strangers. I was shocked at the people who just show up with a microphone and they step up to the plate.
Yeah, I saw them.
So we asked them, you know, basic questions. What's the weirdest thing you eat? What caused you to lock your doors at night? What's the national treasure? We asked them what they thought about Joe
Biden.
What was
the question? Jeff asked that young girl. She asked her something, you know, something.
But they asked, which nobody understood the question, what is the lame duck part of government, in your opinion? Which we finally started changing that question to, what could government do better? Because the first guy we asked, he said, I don't like geese. They attack people. I said, what is the most lame duck part of our government? And he said, I don't like geese. They chase people. I was like, that's a conversation killer. And there was one guy smoking weed. I mean, I said on the after the show, it was the closest to being high I've ever been. He came up there and I was like, is that, what are you smoking weed? And he's like, yeah, is that a problem? I was like, and somebody said, that's legal here in New York, which I didn't know it was. I was like, well, just don't blow it in my face. But then when I said that, he kept trying to blow it in my face. So it was, you know, it was interesting. But what I was going to say, I did something I didn't know if it had ever been done in our society, because I told the people there, I said, look, I want to do something. I don't care if you film it or not, but I'm not sure that anyone has ever blown a duck call championship style here at Times Square. Because, I mean, there were thousands of people there. I mean, hustling and bustling. I said, I'm just going to do it. And he said, go for it. Let us get it on tape. So I brought my ringer, you know, that I take it doing these events.
What was the response or the overall response?
I would say bewilderment, confusion, people calling 911.
They didn't know whether to stay or run.
It was a strange, they had strange looks on their faces. I mean, they so then after I did that, they said, do you have any more duck calls? Then people wanted duck calls. It was like it created a firestorm. So then I was like, why don't we just, I had a few duck calls in my bag, and I said, if they'll blow it, you know, I'll give it to them. So I had like four or five, so we did that, had fun with it. But
did they put any of, how much of that made it on the air?
They put the duck calling on there. We watched so the next night we're on a show, and, you know, in 1 minute they asked us basically, how, you know, what did you think? Of course, they edited it and put movie clips in it. They tried to make it a comedy, I guess. I'm not sure the point of it all was. As soon as we ended, I asked.
But Chase, but you never watched Water, so
no.
Water's
got, they had this
got
thing
his
about,
start.
This is my world, and
right.
The only thing we had to do 15 times is they wanted us to say, I'm Jace, he's, you know, I'm Jep, and this is our treasure, or whatever. We had to do that like 12 times, because we couldn't do it. We do all this thing off the cuff, just go out there, bam, and then our little signature tag, whatever he does, because I wasn't familiar with it, of course, but we finally got it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He was an intern. I mean, started very young at Fox and just doing whatever, you know, work. And then he got his big break when O'Reilly was so big, and he was his guy on the street. So he'd go out and ask these questions. And now he's the big poombah. He's got, you know, the spot on Fox News.
Oh, yeah.
And so he still likes kind of tipping the hat. That's
what
that was
about. Well,
his show
was, he's pretty tough on, you know, people, the left. He's pretty kind of almost kind of cynical. I mean, the gloves came off. I felt like, man, this is pretty bold. I kept thinking that. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, so we did it. I mean, it was all, I guess, good, you know. It was fun interacting with people, but I was surprised even the people that didn't necessarily agree with us, they like our show. I mean, one of the guys, the guy from Canada, because I was like, what's our national treasure to you? And he's like, I'm not from this country. I saw that was I was like, oh, where are you from? And he's like, Canada. I said, well, how long have you been here? And he went, 3 days. But he said, but I know y'all, I watch y'all's show. And I mean, he just didn't look like the type of guy that you would have thought, you know, watches our show. But I was like, hey, well, we appreciate it. But it was good.
So tell where you're going. That's where we started this before we went in the rabbit hole. Tell where you're going next for your next big media opportunity.
Oh, so I'm going to are they our sister podcast?
It really is a sister, even though there's no women on it, it's a sister podcast because that's what they call them. So,
Well, they had the Duck Call Room is the one we're talking about. They asked me to be on. They've been asking me for a few weeks, but I hadn't been. I mean, I'm literally been traveling everywhere. And so I'm going from here to there. So I said, well, I need to watch one of their podcasts because I've never been on it, and they've done a couple hundred of them. I think you've been on it, Phil.
Yeah, I think I did.
And,
I've forgotten what has happened.
And I've been on it, too.
So I pulled up their podcast. Well, I didn't realize they had had Si's wife, our Aunt Chris, on the podcast. I was like, well, when did this happen? I watched that podcast. That is as hard as I have laughed at watching anything in my life. I thought it was awesome because Si, every time he started telling a story, she would just lean into the mic and go, nope. And then they would ask her for the real story. It was like you had a real live fact checker.
That's right.
It was hilarious.
It's actually like Missy on this one. Let's take a break. I don't know, Dad, if you and Jason know this, but two out of three guys experience hair loss before they're 35, which who knew, right? That hadn't really necessarily hit us as much, but it hits a lot of guys out there. And nobody wants to take that gamble with your hair. So you can flip your odds in your favor and save your hair if you use Keeps. Keeps has been one of our sponsors since the very beginning of our podcast. We're very appreciative of these guys. And they know that hair loss can be tough. You see it in your picture. Your barber points it out. My grandkids are bad about pointing it out. Pap, you got a little spot back here on your back of your head. But we don't want to go to the buzz cut or the shave if we can save it with Keeps, especially for you young guys out there that can still hang on to your hair. They have a clinically proven FDA-approved hair treatment. It's available online. And so whether you're looking to prevent your hair loss, maybe stimulate some hair growth, or take care of the hair you have, there's a Keeps physician who will help you select the right products and develop a personalized hair-saving routine that works for you. It's easy. There's no waiting rooms, no pharmacy visits, right to your door, half the cost. So check them out. If the balding jokes are wearing thin, join thousands of guys who have saved their hair. Visit keeps.com/door. You're going to get 50% off your first order. That's KEEPS.com/door. Keeps.com/door.
So I'm going there.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what I'm going to be doing, but I'm sure you can look out for that. And so we'll tape that today. I'm trying to get over all my filming obligations, so I can lead. This maybe can lead to a day off at some point now.
That might be nice. You've been on a run, Jace. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So let's shift gears to back to Hebrews. I know that I was gone a couple of podcasts, and I guess y'all wrapped up Hebrews 2. Is that correct?
Well, we did. And look, we talked about, you know, pro-life our last podcast, but the last time we were here, we had Zach. We got through chapter 3, 1 through 6. But what I thought I would do, Al, is last night I had a late night email, and what I had done is, I had to do some research to even tell this story. A few years ago, I spoke at a university, but they had a leadership meeting there, young men who were going to go into the ministry and be preachers. And there was probably 30 or 40 of them. And so I spoke at it, which was kind of weird because I'm not a minister as in a paid preacher. I mean, I do this because I love Jesus. I mean, I'm an ambassador, but I speak. But for them to ask me, because these guys are going to be preachers, more like what you did, Al, for years, you know, work right at a church. And so I spoke. But one thing I did was I gave my email out to those guys because I thought they were all young men. And I always gravitate towards trying to influence, especially 15 to 25 year olds, because one, they have way more energy. Two, they're way more open-minded. And I just think that that's our future. I want to leave, you know, a legacy. I want to pass, you know, the love for Jesus and this boldness of sharing Jesus to that age bracket. So I'm always attracted to those kind of events. And so, I gave my email out. Well, one of them last night, one of those guys there, I mean, I did this probably, I don't want to date it, but I'd say 7 or 8 years ago. And I've had several of them reach out to me in the last 7 or 8 years. Well, he sent me an email, and it was a question. He had two members of his family that he really loved and respected go through a separation and a divorce just in the past year. And it just devastated him. And he's a newly married guy. And he's like, you know what? I'm just scared right now. I'm upset. I mean, he's real emotional about it. It's been a tough year for him. And he said, I'm just looking for advice on how to have a dynamic, spirit-filled marriage. And he said, I remember that time that you gave out your email and said, if you ever have any, you know, questions or whatever. And so I just found myself, you know, in the middle of the night last night, giving him my response. But I've been studying Hebrews, and I think I want to share what I shared with him, which will also act like a review on where we're at. Because this is what I've been studying. I mean, when I was flying to New York and in the green rooms, and I'd get my Bible out and I would study, and I was studying Hebrews mainly. So what I did last night, and y'all can critique my advice. Look, it was in the middle of the night, and I'm hoping this was from the Holy Spirit, but because I did it off the top of my head, because when he read that, and I know he's gone through a seminary and he knows the Bible. And so he's asked me a question, a guy he doesn't know. He heard me speak one time. So my first thought was Hebrews 13:4, which says marriage should be honored by all and the marriage bed kept pure, for God will judge the adulterer and all the sexually immoral. And I just put there, I said, well, it seems simple enough. What seems to be the problem? There's your verse. And so I then said, I think there are some keys to understanding what led to that statement in Hebrews 13. And then I gave an outline of what we've gone through here. I said the first 10 chapters was a focus to Jewish Christians, mind you, that Jesus should be the focus. And I had some of the verses that we mentioned, chapter 3:1, let fix your thoughts on Jesus. You know, 12:1, fix your eyes on Jesus. I did this analogy of Hebrews 3:6, which is Al. That's where we left off, where he said, Christ is faithful as a son over God's house, and we are his house.
Yep.
And so I made this point in the email about, and I used Ephesians 5 as an example. I said, here was, you know, talking about the different roles in marriage, but his whole point, Paul's point in Ephesians, was that you're married to Jesus first as the church. And so I said, look, I want in my house to be, I want to be, you know, Christ, as far as I'm housing Christ, married to Christ, but then I want to be a Jesus husband to my wife. That's the goal. And so it led me then to the point, which is what we're going to talk about today, which is chapter 3 and verse 13 and 14. And I'll just read it right now and we'll get to it, you know, through the other text. But it says, but encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. And so, and verse 12, I should have read, where it says, see to it that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God, but encourage one another as long as it's called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. So I made a point in there that, look, he's talking to Christians, Jewish Christians, and he's focusing on Jesus, which will show you the relational aspects versus the ritualistic aspects of religion that they had experienced under the old Jewish system. But look at what he was trying to warn these Christians about doing, which is having an unbelieving, hard heart and be deceived by sin because it's deceitful. And so that was kind of the basis to where I wrote down three things: that we focus on Jesus. What was the second point I had? We are unselfish. A key element of marriage is unselfishness. Because when you think about what sin is, according to, and I had James 3 and James 4, where it says, where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires within you? You want something, you can't get it. So I had key number one to a marriage is Jesus, a focus on Jesus and the relational aspect. You know, if you are separated from your wife, there had to be a separation of Jesus by one or both parties at some point for that to happen. Going back to Ephesians 5. So, and then third, I had things change. And because in marriage, everything changes. When you get married, everything changes. It never goes back to the way it was when you're dating. When you have the first kid, guess what? Everything changes. So I put in there, it's tough to navigate this. And so that's why I highlighted what he said here, encourage one another daily. So I told him in my own personal life, I have 5 guys who love Jesus and who are unselfish. And I see that in their marriage. And so I have made every effort to befriend them because I want that circle of friends who, when I have something come up in my marriage I have a question about something. I call them, and I've done it for the last 25 years. I mean, we encourage one another daily because it is difficult to navigate the circumstances. So that was basically the thrust of my message to this guy. And I know this has been a long story, but it was a long email. And I stopped what I was doing and addressed it. But it made me realize that Hebrews, when you get to chapter 12 and 13, there's a lot of exhortations, not just about marriage. But yeah. It started off with you focus on Jesus. You focus on the relational aspect of God. You combine it with faith, chapter 11. And then let us then do this. Let us do that. Let us do that. So I just put it into practice with him asking me a question about marriage. I just backed up, focused on Jesus, gave an exhortation to combine it with faith. And then I said, now as the result, we're going to encourage one another to put this into practice.
Excellent advice.
I think that's
Dave.
Pretty good advice. I was thinking about when you that unselfish passage or the point you made. You had those two passages. Another good one that I use in that same vein, because I agree 100% in marriage, is Philippians 2:1-5, where Paul was talking about the church. But he said, when you look to one another's interest, you look to them before you look to yourself. And in marriage is the place where you need unselfishness the most. And then he closes that section by saying your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, which is back to your first point. But it also shows you that Jesus' unselfish nature, and he was not married, exactly. And yet he was married because the church is his bride. And how much more unselfish could you be than him and when he gave his life for us? So I would add that as well. Let's take a break.
Well, yeah,
I thought that was good.
These are the key pillars. And I mean, I got the idea of doing that from this chapter 3:6, where we left off when it says Christ is faithful as the son of God's house. Now, granted, he was given an argument that Jesus is better than Moses and that he's the builder of everything. And he talked about God's house, but then all of a sudden he makes this practical illustration where he says, we are his house. We're housing the son of God.
Yeah. One of the reasons these texts take on new meaning in lieu of the, when Hebrews was written, probably mid-first century, old writings, Jay. But today, fast forward, there's a reason over 60% of all marriages end in divorce.
Yeah.
So you see the dangers of these texts when you say, if you don't apply them, 60% of the people, including preachers, they divorce.
Hey, 85% of people in prison, you know where they came? A broken home.
Broken home.
That's my point. So yeah. Our culture today, when you read these texts, you talk about need to be put into practice. I mean, over 60% of the people, including preachers and this young guy like you're talking about, that just happened to him, his bro, whatever you said, his kinfolks. Broken.
Yeah, and these are people in the church, which is my point. This letter
the ramifications of that is very detrimental to anybody as a nation.
This letter was written to Jewish Christians, and I think we've tried to explain the significance of that and them being drawn to this their old ritualistic view of religion and law keeping. But so many times I think in the church, you know, we just think that you just read a verse like Hebrews 13:4. Oh, don't do this. I mean, God will judge you. Keep that marriage bed pure. And they're like, well, how do I do that? What? Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. Marriage is difficult. I mean, I wrote in my closing remarks, I said, look, you're right. Because he said one of the reasons he reached out to me, he said, you seemingly have a dynamic marriage and a lot of your family members do also. And I just want to know the reason for that. But I put this, I said, you're right. We do have a dynamic marriage. I said, but we focus on Jesus. We focus on sharing Jesus. I said, and we're unselfish. I was like, I'm just telling you, that's how this is working. I said, but I will say this, in the over 30 years, it has never been easy, and I capitalize never been easy. It's never been easy.
By the way, you gave him that letter, and you took the time to do it, which kudos to you. Encourage one another. He didn't say, make sure on Sundays when you meet, it's a daily.
Daily.
People misunderstand that when you walk out of the church building on Sunday morning,
exactly.
you've got Monday coming up, and you need to apply these principles and these admonitions daily, and you don't need to, you know, there can't be gaps in that because.
No. And you throw in the fact that things change. I mean, I look back at my life.
But you made, that's a good point, Jase, because nobody, I say it this way, nobody stands before the preacher or the justice of the peace and says your vows and your I do's. Nobody in that moment has any idea about going out and committing adultery against their spouse. In that moment, they're like, I'm committed, I'm going to do this.
Yep.
But
they're
what
throwing
happens?
Rice
life happens.
And flowers in every direction and smiles. And
in that moment, it's easy. But the minute you leave there and you start just living life, that's when stuff starts to happen that then you have to have a basis. And if you don't, you're right, Jase, if you don't know how, then you're going to fail when your first test comes.
So by the way, Jase, while you're there, what if or what is it when you see people where there is no God, no faith in God, no, because you're going to end up faith. But what about the ones who are unbelievers and they were taught in high school, yeah, they're arguing about whether they're male or female and all this stuff that's going on in our culture. Would you say that to those people, I wonder how their marriages are?
Well, I mean, I think some people make it work just because it's just an arrangement and they're not trying to kill each other or, you know, it's just, I mean, I've shared this before. I have met non-Christians who seemingly have a pretty good marriage and I'm one that can't keep my mouth shut. So I'm like, well, how does that work? And most of the times I've seen it where they've just lowered the bar on what they're trying to accomplish, which is basically, you know, a financial arrangement. And you have a sexual partner there, and yep. Their expectations are pretty low about making the world a better place, or you know, and so I think it's possible to get along, and it happens. I mean, I feel like it may be a gift from God, even though they're not acknowledging that. But for the most part, I mean, you said the number of people.
I mean, divorced. If your children,
from what I'm hearing on the golf course and in a card game, and. You know, most husbands, especially non-Christians, are not talking favorably about their wife.
I know.
At all.
That's right.
It is just, she's just the butt of a joke. And, which is disturbing, you know, but you're not going to, don't be shocked. You can't.
So, Jase, we do something similar. So, we do Ephesians 5:33. I like that idea about starting with the command. Ephesians 5:33. Paul concludes his segment using marriage as an illustration about Christianity by saying, husbands, love your wives, you know, as to the Lord, and wives, respect your husbands. And so you're like, okay, well, there it is. That's just pretty simple. I mean, just do it. I mean, just, you know, you're commanded to love your wife and the wife is commanded to respect her husband. But then I always flip it, Lisa and I do, and we do a presentation that says, but what would happen? I mean, how do we get to that point where that's easy and not difficult? So we take the whole thing and flip it. And Lisa does the whole thing with the ladies about what it looks like to be lovable. And she does it out of Proverbs 31. And then I do a whole thing about for men about what it looks like to be respectable out of Job 31. And the idea there is if I'm being respectable, if I'm trying to be a respectable man of God, that's why I live my life every day to be more like Jesus, then it's going to be pretty easy for her to respect me, which is what God commanded her to do. But if I'm not acting or living respectably, it's very hard for her to respect me. And the same thing for her. How lovable is she? Well, it depends on what she's loving. And if it's not Christ, then she's hard to love.
Well, yeah.
So you're still got the command, but you got to live the results is the key.
It is interesting that the Hebrew writer, and Jase, you can elaborate on this because it's a conundrum. We call these marriages broken when there's a divorce. We say the children of these people came from broken family, broken. It is interesting that the Hebrew writer, for some reason, encouraged one another daily as long as it's called and it's capitalized today.
Oh, yeah.
What exactly is the thrust of that?
I want to get into that.
I figured you would. That's just why I'm asking.
Well, that's
a strange way to have an admonition. He said, do this daily, encourage one another. instead of discourage one another, just think about it. Make sure you discourage one another daily. You know, by the way you're operating would be the antithesis to encourage one another daily. As long as it's called today, and today is capitalized.
Well, which is why now that you're seeing why I told that Andy Griffith story and the guy giving the bad advice when he said, don't do today what you can do tomorrow. That was a setup for when we got to this point here. Yeah. Because
fair point.
When you think about it, that's
Hang on, Jason.
That's bad advice. Hang on.
Let's take a break.
Well, it's a quote from Psalm 95, but before we read it, I want to say, and I'll answer the question in time we got left, because I think you've hit on a key point. You know, I wanted to reiterate about this idea about a command and what the basis is, because look, there are commands. And what changes from a ritualistic standpoint to a relationship with God is your motivation. I mean, we know the famous passage in Titus says, grace of God teaches us to say no, or Romans 12, in view of God's mercy to offer yourselves as living sacrifices. But this was something Jesus foreshadowed in John 14 when he was talking about the Holy Spirit coming. And remember, this is right after he said, I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. You know, I'm preparing a place for you. And Thomas said, well, how do we know? How are we going to get there? And he's like, I am the way, I am the truth. And he's like, but I'm not going to leave you as orphans, and I'm going to send you the Spirit, and he will comfort you. But then all of a sudden, he gets into this in 14:21, because I think it reiterates what we're discussing here in Hebrews. Whoever has my commands and obeys them, he is the one who loves me. And that's why I'm using the term, when I have five buddies who love Jesus, and I made this point in the email, that just sounds like a phrase, what they call Christianese. But I'm saying, I'm not talking about religious people. I'm not talking about guys who go to church. I'm not guys that I have a bunch of in common with. I'm talking about guys who, based on my observation of them, the number one thing that comes out is they love Jesus. And I'll give you an example. Like the pastor that we had before, Trent Langhoffer, who I have absolutely zero in common with. I mean, he's a yuppie of yuppies. He's a workout guy. He uses words and phrases I've never heard of. He doesn't hunt, fish, or anything that I do. There's one thing about him that drew me to him, and I pursued him. I asked him to come with me on trips and events, and I pursued friendship, had him over to eat. He loves Jesus. It stands out in his message, in his sermon, in his talk. He literally loves Jesus. I'll tell you another person.
He was a drug addict before he became a preacher.
Yeah. Tim Tebow's another guy. When I met him for the first time, I mean, I'm like, oh, he played football. He played for Florida. I was into all that. In about 5 seconds after meeting him, it became clear to me, this man loved Jesus. He got a passion for Jesus. When he came to our house and stayed a couple of days and did an event, it went on from 5 seconds. Every minute, every person that walked in my house, he made it really clear that he loves Jesus. Well, me as a guy who wants to have a happy marriage, who wants to make the world a better place, who realizes the struggles in life, I want these people around me. And so I'm making a point there because I'm reading this John 14. He said, whoever has my commands, 21, and obeys them, he is the one who loves me. So he gets to verse 23 and says, if anyone loves me, he will obey my teaching. My Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. So it mirrors what is said in Hebrews 3:6 when he said Christ is faithful as a son over God's house. The reason I'm making such a big deal about this is because it all starts in the home. You spend the most time there. We're responsible as men to lead this family to heaven and in ways that are productive in life. Well, acknowledging that Jesus, you're housing Jesus in your house, in this conversation with your wife that you're supposedly is a reflection of you being married to Jesus, Ephesians 5, those are the moments where you stop what you're saying, and I've done it many times, and thought, what am I doing here? I am being completely selfish in whatever this argument is that has gone off the rails.
Yep.
These are the thoughts. Jace,
when we're having a meal, a little small meal, I say, y'all ready? And everybody kind of stops. And you have 10 people there or visitors there or no visitors there. It doesn't make any difference. We get up there. We're thankful for the food. We say, well, here's this food here. We're thankful. We truly are. But then we say, and Jesus, we are thankful for what you did. You removed.
Yeah.
There's always a admonition to love Jesus. Then we're going and thank you for the food.
Yeah.
And if people see that, and they're like, they see they're being thankful.
Yeah.
And they're mentioning Jesus, their Lord, and it's in public, and they don't care who's standing there.
Yeah. Well,
it seems like a small thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm taking it a step further and even acknowledging, I mean, like my wife and I, people laugh at us. And even Trent, who I mentioned earlier, him and his wife, they laugh at us because my wife and I, we disagree in public. And we're fine with that. And
we disagree in public.
We will disagree in public. Look, passionately. And people are so shocked because they're like, because most people want to portray an image of we've got it all figured out and we agree and, you know, we're running down the road, holding our kids' hands, you know, clicking our heels, and it's a beautiful day. And, you know, we tend to vent our problems and our disagreements. And look,
you're almost saying, Lord, thank you for this food, but you know, I don't know about this woman. I mean,
exactly. She's dead wrong on this point. And, you know, what would Jesus do? And
hang on, Jace. Let's take a break.
But my point is, look, we're flawed people and marriage is difficult. Getting along with a woman in on an everyday basis for me has been the most difficult thing adventure of my life.
I had one admonition and all of you were together, you and the other three sons, and you're looking at me and I said, always remember, boys, when God made a woman, he made a strange creature.
Yeah, I know. You imprinted that in my head. And there's a few other things that I've had.
I didn't say you don't love them. You love them. You take care of them.
I've had to kill the sacred cow advice many times.
Yep.
But my point is, you know, you don't want to come across like this is not easy. There's a reason people are getting divorced. It's very difficult. And without Jesus, I'm not even sure how you could pull it off. But that's what we're discussing. But I think you can apply that to this system in all facets of life, not just marriage. You know, life is difficult in the moment. And yep. And he's trying to get you to see that this God that you're following is real and alive 24/7 and is perfectly aware of
that's
everything
right.
You're thinking, doing in any moment.
Great point.
So tap into that in this moment and say, well, wait a minute here. I'm housing Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit. Who am I trying to kid? You can't just throw all your religion away when you're not in front of
people. I'm an ambassador for Jesus
yeah.
here.
And your house turn into some kind of, you know, war. it just doesn't make any sense. And your kids are going to see through it. And that's not going to work. So, Jace,
I wasn't with you guys when you did 3:1-6. But the one line I put down in my own personal notes was focus on the builder, not the building or the structure. And
yep.
I think that's in
yep.
essence what makes it so great. And he uses Moses as the example of the building, the early building of the structure, because the whole idea about the people coming out of Israel was to start a process by which he would build a people on earth that would ultimately bring the Messiah. But also, he would bring them law to show us that we can't keep law. So all that was part of the structure. And we've talked about it so many times. I mean, you could bring that forward to 2,000 years.
Yeah.
And we've said this is people are focusing on the building someplace instead of the builder, the one
yep.
who built the actual house, which is us, not some wooden
exactly.
brick and mortar.
Well, the reason I wanted to go through all this and the reason I agree, and we did talk about that same thought, Al, in the podcast. all that was just an introduction, because in chapter 3, verse 7, he says, so. And in some versions, translations has therefore.
Yep.
But that's why what you just depicted, he's fixing to say something about.
Yep.
He just said, Jesus, I mean, you know, if you go back to chapter 1 and 2, he's now speaking through his son. Jesus considers us family. He mentions that in chapter 2. He came here and humbled himself and became a human so that it might destroy him who holds the power of death. We went through that. And free those who were held in slavery. He's able to help us when we're tempted. He's called us to heaven. We have him in our bodies. And he's like, so? So what? And he quotes Psalm 95. And it says, so as the Holy Spirit says, which I do think is an interesting phrase. Very seldom in the Bible do you see that, because a lot of people think, yeah, boy, if I could just hear the Holy Spirit say something to me. Well, he does. And,
yeah,
and when you read the Word of God, he is saying something. And
he
he's
did.
Fixed
he wrote it.
It
down.
I mean, that's what it says. He also says the same thing in there's another place he uses this where he says the Holy Spirit testifies. I'll find it later.
Yep.
But so he says, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as you did in the rebellion during the time of testing in the desert, where your fathers tested and tried me and for 40 years saw what I did. That is why I was angry with that generation and said, their hearts are always going astray and they have not known my ways. So I declared an oath in my anger, they shall never enter my rest. And then he goes, what we read earlier on 12 and 13. And then he says, verse 14, we have come to share in Christ if we hold firmly till the end the confidence we had at first. And has just been said, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as you did it in the rebellion. Who were they who heard and rebelled? Were they not all those Moses led out of Egypt? And with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, with those bodies who fell in the desert? And to whom did God swear that they would never enter his rest, if not to those who disobeyed? So we see that they were not able to enter because of their unbelief. So what stands out to me more than anything is he's warning against so-called Christians, Jewish heritage of unbelief and hard hearts, and don't be deceived by sin. Al, you want to add to that?
No, I think you're exactly right. And I think, and again, if you go back, so that's Psalm 95.
Yeah, I was going to read the rest of it. I was going to read the rest of Psalm 95.
It's pretty powerful.
Oh, it is powerful. He says in verse 1, come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation, which is going back to this relationship thing. Here's David writing a song crying out. Let us come before him with thanksgiving and extol him with music and song. For the Lord is the great God, the great King above all gods. In his hand are the depths of the earth and the mountain peaks that belong to him. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands form the dry land. Come, let us bow down and worship. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care. I mean, how intimate is this relationship he is describing? This great creator, designer of the universe, yep, and even us, but he's like, we're the people of his pasture. Today, and then here's the quote.
Here's the warning.
Hear his voice. Don't harden your hearts as you did at Meribah, which that means quarreling. This is why I brought up this marriage illustration.
Yep.
Because it's difficult. Life is difficult. Where your fathers tested and tried me. I skipped a part. As you did at that day at Massa, which, you know what that means? Testing. Though they had seen what I did. For 40 years, I was angry with that generation. I said, they are a people whose hearts go astray, and they have not known my way. So I declared on oath in my anger, they shall never enter my rest. And the only thing I'll say before I get y'all's comment is that you remember when Jesus was baptized and he had no sin, and God declared him the Son of God. He was proud of him in whom he loved. And then what happened? The Spirit carried him to the wilderness. Well, that's what happens, look, in life, in marriage, in us, when we declare Jesus as Lord. I mean, life is a wilderness. It is a lot of temptation, which he just talked about in chapter 3. There's a lot of testing. And in this case, they were tempted to go back to the ritualistic form of religion because it's more comfortable. It's more comfortable just to put it in a package and not have it interfere with your everyday life. But Jesus takes it to the next level. God wanted to save us completely and have something for us to speak for daily, on a daily basis. And I think that's what he's addressing here.
No, I think you're right. And I think in the overtime, we should explore that as well as this idea about looking back, because I've got an interesting thought I want to make about that. So we're about to go to overtime. If you hadn't followed us over before, it's really, you know, more discussion of this text and what we're talking about. AblazeTV.com/unashamed is how you'll get there to be able to catch our overtime segment. So we'll flesh this thought out a little bit more from the end of Hebrews chapter 3 in our overtime. We'll see you there.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube. And be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.